What is the one thing you're most passionate about? Could you condense what that is and why it inspires you into 20 pictures? Could you then get up in front of a crowd and talk about it in 7 minutes? It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, a new way to share ideas. It's called Pachakacha, and events are popping up all over the world and all over Iowa. I'll talk with the organizers of Pachakacha events in Des Moines and Davenport. We'll hear from presenters, too. And of course, this is the latest expression of an old tradition. We'll take a look back at the Chautauqua Lecture Series and talk about how that tradition relates to TED Talks and Pachakacha today. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. At a Pachakacha event, each presenter picks their topic, 20 pictures that represent that topic, and then they have 20 seconds per picture to talk. It's like a more rapid and relaxed version of TED Talks, and events are popping up all over the world and all over the state of Iowa. With me this hour is Melissa Moore. She is Director of Education at the Figge Art Museum. She is also the organizer of the Pachakacha events at the Figge, where they've been going on for some time now, right, Melissa? How long have you been doing this?
We started in February of 2013, and since that point have done about 16 of them.
All right. Also with me is Sarah Wells. She is co-director of the Des Moines Pachakacha event. Hello, Sarah.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
And how long has this been going on in Des Moines?
We've been doing it since September of 2010, and we've had we're coming up on our 18th event.
All right. And Sarah, I'll ask you first. When did you hear about Pachakacha?
Yeah, I was first introduced to Pachakacha at Drake University, where I was a graduate student, and we had to do it for an assignment. And it was a fascinating, a new way to share information. And from that, I became familiar with the fact that these events were happening. And so that's how I got exposed to it, was through a homework assignment.
All right. And have you looked into the history of it? Can you fill us in on where this whole idea came from?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an interesting story because it happened very organically. Astrid Klein and Mark Dytham, who are the owners of Klein Dytham Architecture down in Tokyo, they had the first event in 2003. And what they wanted to do was to give their young architects a chance to share their information, to share their design works in a way that was visual. They also recognized that architects like to talk a lot about their work, and so they wanted to minimize it. And so what happened was they had this first event back in 2003, and it was such a big hit. The style of it was really engaging that they started having more of it, and then more people wanted to have these events in their own cities. And then from there, it just organically exploded into beyond just architecture, other design artist and beyond that into just things people are passionate about.
And Melissa, when did you first hear about it?
We were looking into programming at the Figge Art Museum, programming that would engage a broader group from our community, because we felt that we were targeting many people and yet we still weren't getting people to come into the museum for the very specific programs we were doing. And so we were looking around at different opportunities for engaging especially local artists and getting them to share what they were doing and become almost stakeholders in the program. And our executive director had recently come to us from California and said, I went to an event. I don't know how to pronounce it. Something like Machu Picchu, I'm not sure. But you should look into it because it might be just the thing that we're looking for in terms of engaging more of our community.
All right. So I'm not sure how you found it based on that, but maybe we should talk about how it's spelled, because to a native English speaker, I want to say Pachakucha or something like that, but it is Pachakacha.
Yes.
Right? All right. And there's a central Pachakacha organization. So if you want to have one of these events, you need to register with them, right, Melissa?
They have what they call a handshake agreement. And in that, they stipulate a few different things. This isn't something where they want to make sure that there's an integrity to this program that represents what they initially started, which we were talking about earlier. So you do the handshake agreement. You say, I'm going to do a few of these every year, and we'll make sure to follow the rules, which is actually harder than you'd think, following the rules and getting presenters to follow them. But as long as you do that and make sure that you are within the boundaries, they have a wonderful support system for helping you promote it. So it actually is a great thing that they're doing.
And part of the agreement is that if you are the one who makes this agreement with them, you have sort of your city for a year, right? Other people can't organize Pachacacha events in your city?
That is correct, at least not official ones.
All right. And all right, the rules seem incredibly simple. 20 images, 20 seconds per image. Why is it difficult to get people to follow those rules?
So you're used to talking, Charity, and we love listening to you. But think about talking about one image for just 20 seconds. That might be fine for the first image in your presentation, but then you put up the next one and you want to discuss a certain point with that and realize that you only have about 4 seconds to say about that one. The broader topic that you'll be discussing for 6 minutes and 40 seconds, of course, you could just talk straight through that. But when you're breaking it down into those 20-second increments, I think it gets you thinking about how you present in a different way. It's a fun challenge for people. We say it's informal yet informative in terms of people laughing and realizing that it's difficult, but it's really a good opportunity.
And so when a presenter is doing their presentation, those slides are on a timer, right? So they are going to move on without them. Even if I have 45 seconds of something to say about this picture, the next picture is going to come up in 20 seconds.
Exactly. The way that we do it is we put it, all of the images from all the presentations for one evening, and we usually have between 8 and 10 presenters. We put all of those images into a PowerPoint, and we put them on a timer, so 20 seconds a time for the images. And then we have slides in between. So we'll have a thank you slide at the end, and you can keep talking, but I'm going to get up there and bump you off because it's going to go straight on then to the next introduction slide, and we invite the next presenter up. So it's actually a relief that it's out of my hands in a way, and it becomes a fun joke too as we transition from presenter to presenter. I will say that most people are pretty good about it. We joke that the mayor of Davenport, Mayor Gluba, did one of our inaugural Pachacacha, and he's quite a talker if you've ever met him. But even he adhered to the rules, so if he can do it, anybody can do it.
So, Sarah, at the events in Des Moines, how many presenters do you usually have per event?
Similarly, we always shoot for 8 to 10 is sort of an ideal. Sometimes we have up to 12. We try not to go over 12 just because it makes for a little bit longer evening. But we definitely target a variety and try to have a diverse amount of topics in our evenings as well.
And can you give me an idea, just some examples of some of the topics?
Well, some of the topics range from some of my favorites, where we had somebody speak on the Halifax explosion up in Nova Scotia. We've had somebody talk about lucid dreaming. We've had somebody explore the idea of colors in a very more sort of scientific way. We've had people talk about Negro League baseball, the power of being an introvert. The topics really range from very personal to trips people have taken to historical. And always something for everyone is what I say.
And if somebody wants to do a presentation, they don't have to have some sort of background or credentials in the subject that they want to present on. You just trust them that it's something they know about?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, a lot of people will compare Pachacacha to TED Talks. And the way that we sort of describe them and how the parent organization describes it is TED Talks is very much the expert, sort of top-down talking. Whereas with Pachacacha, anyone can talk about it because you're talking about something you're passionate about, possibly a project you're working on, a trip you've taken. And what I love about it is because you're talking about something that's so meaningful to you, or hopefully it is, that even someone who's nervous or doesn't have a lot of experience, because they're coming from a place of familiarity and excitement and enthusiasm, they're going to be an incredibly engaging speaker.
All right. Josh Ford is on the line with us, and he has been a presenter at the Figgy Pachacacha in Davenport. He's from Moline. Hello, Josh.
Hi. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. So how many presentations have you done?
So I've just done one Pachacacha presentation. I did the first one. I think I was the lead-off batter at the first PK.
Wow, a brave, brave man.
Well, yeah, I don't know if you want to, don't give too much credit.
And what was your presentation about?
My presentation was on Stanley Kubrick, his work, both still and film work. I'm a photographer and had been inspired by Kubrick for many, many years. And my family and I had just returned from Los Angeles, where there was the first major retrospective on Kubrick's work in the U.S. At Los Angeles County Museum of Art. And so I had some images that I had captured from there, and also pulled some screen grabs from Kubrick's films and some of his still work, and tried to kind of weave that together into a cohesive presentation.
So what made you want to do this?
Melissa. Melissa and I had gotten to know each other through the Figgy, and when she approached me with the idea, you know, without hesitation, agreed and thought it was a pretty unique program and a unique opportunity for the Quad Cities. And again, you know, kind of going into it somewhat blind with it being the first PK night in Davenport. You know, I think I was anxious, and the other presenters as well were anxious to kind of see how it would play out and how it worked. But I think it's a great opportunity for the Quad Cities, and the Figgy is a great resource, and that was one of the other reasons that I was anxious to do it. Is, you know, I think it's a cool way to get people into the Figgy. You know, there's people I talk to in the Quad Cities that are always looking for something to do, and I'll say, well, have you been to this exhibition at the Figgy? And they'll say, no, I've not been there. Well, go check it out. So I thought that was kind of a nice lead into that as well.
So, Josh, having given one of these presentations, what would you tell someone who's considering it?
Do it, for sure. I think, you know, it's...
But why? Why do it?
Well, I think, you know, it's great to share. I mean, it's bringing people together, for lack of a better example. You know, I think anytime you can share something with someone or be shared to is a great experience. It's also kind of a fun challenge just to see, like, oh, well, what am I passionate about? Mm-hmm. And what would I say if I'm going to, you know, have a microphone and 20 slides and in a room full of people? It's kind of interesting to test yourself and see what exactly you know, test your mettle a little bit.
Right. Well, and even if it doesn't go well, you're only up there for 7 minutes, right?
Right.
You're going to survive it no matter what.
How bad can it be? Yeah. Well, and the slides keep it moving. You know, I think different than a TED talk, than, you know, it's for someone who maybe isn't used to public speaking. The slides, you know, I didn't think it was really daunting to have 20 seconds for a slide. I thought it was actually beneficial and helpful. It kept moving things along. So, you know, you didn't feel like you were without a safety net. You know, if you needed something to talk about in 20 seconds, you were going to have something else to talk about.
Nice. Well, Josh, thank you so much for telling us about your experience.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Josh Ford was the first presenter at the first Pachacacha event at the Figgy Art Museum in Davenport. And we're going to continue our conversation about Pachacacha in just a moment. We're also going to take a look back into history at one of the forerunners of events like this one and so many other ways to share information. We'll talk about the history of the Chautauqua Lecture Series a little later this hour. With me right now is Melissa Moore. She's Director of Education at the Figgy Art Museum, where they have Pachacacha events on a regular basis. And also Sarah Wells is here. She's co-director of the Des Moines Pachacacha events. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about Pachacacha. It's a new way to share ideas with people in your community. There are events happening all over the world and all over Iowa right now. There have been events in Davenport, Des Moines, Fairfield. I know I'm forgetting at least one location. And we also found out just today that there are going to be Pachacacha events happening in Muscatine very soon. So if you'd like to join our conversation, if you've been a Pachacacha presenter, we would love to hear about your experiences. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And just a refresher, if you're just joining us, Pachacacha is a presentation method where the presenter gets to pick a topic they want to talk about. They are limited to 20 images, and they can talk about each image for 20 seconds. And we've put up a link to the central Pachacacha site on our Facebook page if you want to find out more about it and watch some of the presentations that they have linked to. With me now, Sarah Wells, co-director of the Des Moines Pachacacha events, and Melissa Moore, director of education at the Figge Art Museum, where they have Pachacacha events on a regular basis, including three coming up very soon in rapid succession on September 25th, October 9th, and October 30th. And I'm sorry, Sarah, I had your last name down as
That's okay.
As well.
I didn't want to interrupt you.
All right. Sarah Wilson. I apologize. That's a terrible mistake to make. I apologize.
My mom won't
that.
Know when she's listening.
All right. Sarah Wilson, co-director of the Des Moines Pachacacha events. All right. And I want to ask you, Melissa, because just before the break, we were talking to Josh, who was the very first presenter at the Figge Museum, and he made it sound like you had to twist his arm a little bit to be
maybe
a presenter.
A little bit.
Yeah. So at that first event, was it hard to get people to participate?
I wouldn't say it was hard. We just had to be strategic. This was a completely new concept in our area. We had spent I don't know how many hours sitting around our table during office meetings trying to figure out if it was something that still fit with our mission and how we could make sure to really start it with a bang in a way that it would continue to grow, because we didn't want it to be a one-off. We wanted it to be something that we could embrace for a very long time in our programming. So I started by going to people we had worked with in the past. In Josh's case, he had done a lot of photography with the museum. He actually ended up doing my wedding photography, which was awesome, and was one of those community members who was very engaged in other ways in the community. So I knew that if we could get people who were interesting and interested and good at public speaking, we'd be able to at least start off strongly, and then hopefully it would catch on and they would tell their friends and so on and so forth. And that's exactly what happened. Our first Pachacacha was actually only six presenters, but they talked about everything from the civil rights movement to photography to Stanley Kubrick, as Josh mentioned. And we had one community member who talked about art that she loved, and it was a really interesting mix. So from that night, we have actually grown to have over 125 presenters, and we're very proud of that.
And how about in Des Moines, Sarah?
Yeah. So honestly, she just told our story as well. We were very strategic about who we asked. We wanted to reach out to people who we knew would be comfortable trying something new and different. We were really fortunate to have an amazing venue at the Des Moines Social Club, and that's kind of our home now. And it was a place at the time was when it was new, people were really excited to be a part of events there. And so we similarly reached out to people who we knew could handle it, who would be comfortable trying something different. And we also, that was one of our lighter ones. We had seven speakers, and we didn't know, were we going to get 10 people showing up to this? Were we going to have 20 people? And we exceeded capacity and had over 150 people at our first event. It was incredible.
So do you have to turn people away who want to be presenters?
You know, we never turn them away. We just shift them to the next event. There's only been one situation where what somebody wanted to present on was sort of against what we call our golden rules, which is you can't ask for money and you can't sell anything. So for the most part, if we are at limit with an event, people are more than happy to speak at an upcoming event. So the good thing is we always have an event around the corner that we can move them to.
And so is there a theme ever to the events? Do you try to get people to fit within a theme?
You know, we've done a couple of events where we've partnered with different organizations and to explore different themes. And while those have been successful, what we have found from the feedback from our audience is that they really prefer a hodgepodge of topics. They love that they never know what's going to be coming up next. And so we have found that having a lot of diversity in our topics, people really, really enjoy that.
How about you and at the Figge? Do you try to have an overarching theme, or is it just...
Like in Des Moines, like with Sarah, we try to keep it pretty broad so we do have that variety in every session. The three sessions that are coming up that you mentioned in September and October are actually a little different. We're trying to see how it goes when we have the theme as an exhibition that we have on display. Mm-hmm. So on September 25th, the theme is Living Proof Exhibit, which is about cancer survivors and art therapy. And we have presenters who are not only survivors, but also caregivers, or they work for organizations that that contribute in those ways. And then we're going to do the same thing on October 9th with a faculty show. So we have college and university faculty members displaying their artworks in the museum, and we're inviting them to come and be the presenters for that Pachakacha. On October 30th, it's just spooky. We did it last year and said, let's try spooky and see what happens. And it was fun.
I'll bet indeed. It was. I'll bet it was. Caleb is on the line from Ames. Hi, Caleb. Caleb, are you there?
Hi
there. And you have been a presenter at Pachakacha in Des Moines, right?
That's right. Five times now, I think.
Five times.
Is that right, Sarah?
It is right. And I just have to say, Caleb's, he did a presentation on introversion, and it was one of the top 20 internationally most viewed presentations in 2013.
Very cool. So, all right, you did it once. You've done it five times. What is it about this that keeps you coming back?
A couple things. One is I'm kind of a, in spite of the fact that I'm an introvert, I'm also a sucker for public speaking opportunities. So I really, really enjoy the chance to get up there and talk about something that I love, that I'm passionate about, in a really unrestrained kind of a way. You can talk about anything you like. You've got a captive audience, and you can talk to those people about that thing to your heart's content, provided that you follow the rules. That's one thing. And then I think the other thing is, I like the challenge of the 20 slides, 20 seconds, 6 minutes, 40 seconds. I respond well to challenges, so that's been a source of enjoyment for me to try and do that.
Okay. And do you also enjoy watching other people? Is that another part of it
absolutely.
For you? What's the most interesting thing you've learned about from watching other presentations?
From a knowledge standpoint, there was a presentation that I saw on puppy mills. I didn't even know there was such a thing. But this presentation really sort of opened my eyes to the industrial way that that puppies can be raised and treated, and really got me animated around thinking carefully about how I interact with my pets and with the kind of conditions that exist out there. And then the Halifax explosion Sarah mentioned at the top of the hour. Fascinating, when my favorite presentation, hands down, that I've seen. Just really interesting and well done.
Interesting. Well, Caleb, thank you so much for sharing. And Sarah, I know you've also been a presenter as well as one of the organizers. What have you presented about?
Yeah, so I try to present once a year. So sometimes, you know, when you don't have enough, we always have a couple on standby that we can fill in. So I've talked about the importance and the science of humor and why it's important to our mental health and our well-being, talking about personality. The last one I did was on mindfulness, but I think the one that people probably remember the most was the one I improvised.
You improvised. How did that work?
So Matt McQuillan, who I need to give him a shout out because he's my city organizer and he's incredible. Him and I were talking and just we thought it would be an interesting thing to explore because I've been improvising for about 10 years. And so he captured images from previous presenters. And I didn't see them before and the evening. And then we got a topic from the audience. And so I had to speak on that topic from the audience and connect it back to the photos.
Well, that's a very different kind of exercise than normal Pachakacha.
And I wouldn't recommend anyone to do it again. What I will say is that it was, while it was fun and entertaining, once we got done with it, I said, you know, like it was entertaining, but for me, it didn't feel in the spirit of it. Because I'm passionate about improv. But so we only did that once and now have since just refocused on the spirit of Pachakacha, which is what are people really, really passionate about.
Now, I watched your presentation about mindfulness. And I thought one of the most interesting things you did was that you skipped a slide, basically. You said, okay, for the next 20 seconds, I want you to just be present where you are. And you were silent on stage for 20 seconds. To me, that seems like the most nerve-wracking 20 seconds ever. How did that feel?
My heart was racing about as fast as it could. It was interesting because it forced me to connect. Sometimes I think it's easy. I think it can be easy in this format to get quick and get a little urgency and to not breathe during it. So it was a good opportunity for me to just take a breath. And I heard from so many people afterwards, at the beer break, that event, that they said, I can't tell you the last time that I just gave myself 20 seconds. And for some people, it was a pretty profound experience. So I was glad that we could all experience this wonderfully awkward moment together.
Very interesting. Andrew is on the line in Muscatine. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great. Thank you for calling. And you are Andrew Anderson of Muscatine. We've had you on the show before to talk about the Muscatine River Monster. And you've both been a presenter, and now you're organizing a new event in Muscatine. So let's start with your presentation at the Figgy. What did you talk about?
Well, I actually talked about the River Monster Project. So there were so many things that I thought would be really fun to talk about, but I kept coming back to that one. So, and, you know, it got a really good response there. People were genuinely surprised, and there was one point in the presentation where it kind of showed this big pink inflatable thing, and everybody gasped, and I wasn't, you know, expecting that. It was really fun to surprise people.
Nice. And what about that experience and that event made you think, oh, we need to do this in Muscatine?
It's the way I see it is a really interesting community building tool, and so it's fun to talk about things, but to use it as a way to connect people who are passionate about things. And especially people who have kind of a creative aspect or a entrepreneurial aspect. So I see it as a way to help float those people out and help those people get to know each other. So that's really the reason that I think we're going ahead with that here in Muscatine.
Interesting. And when is your event?
So we're doing it on October 23rd. It's a Thursday, and it's at the History and Industry Center, which is a pretty cool venue here. And so we're following a lot of the things that, you know, Pekakicha suggests, and then things I've learned from Melissa as well. Actually, Melissa was the one that twisted my arm, I think, which he didn't have to twist too hard. There was so one of the things that I think works really well that they do at the Figgy is open it up beforehand and invite people in to have a burger and a drink before the presentation starts. So we're going to do the same format here.
And okay, again, when's the date?
It's Thursday, October 23rd at the History and Industry Center. And so we'll have drinks and pizza catered by Port City Underground at 5 p.m., and then presentations will start at 6 p.m.
All right. Andrew Anderson, thank you so much for calling.
Thanks, yeah.
And Melissa, have you done one of these presentations?
I have not. Like Sarah, I think about it. I'm kind of on call, I guess, if we ever have too many people.
Do you have one sitting ready?
I have the photos and the idea, so I think I could put it together. And I don't want to give it away, but it involves an archaeological dig in Italy, a volleyball court, and an open-air dance club. So,
well, you've got to get on the schedule now. And you haven't done it because the response has been so good that you always have plenty of people?
Or? You know what? I have a fun time being the MC for the evening, and they don't need to hear from me any more than they already do. So I think that the way that we have it formatted, you know, I'm also plugging different events in the community and things going on at the Figgy in between each of the speakers. I do little introductions, and I really like them to be the ones shining that night. But I'll tell you what, I'm excited to do it. I want to. It's just a matter of the right moment. So, Sarah, you've inspired me. Maybe I'll put it together.
And or you know what? You come up here, and I'll go down there, and we'll swap out.
Hey, that's a good idea.
So, Sarah, in Des Moines, this has been going on for 4 years.
Yeah. We were the first in Iowa.
No, nice. That's great.
And what do you think keeps it going?
You know, I don't know, Melissa, if you can, there's something really magical about the night. It's
yes.
It's unlike any other event, and it's incredibly difficult to explain to people sometimes, like, because some people go, so people are just presenting. It's so much more than that. And I think what creates such energy about it is what you've heard already, that it's this great opportunity to build community, to get people. There's nothing more wonderful than hearing people talk about things they're passionate about. And it's an inspirational night. And the thing that's awesome is if there's a topic or a speaker you're not connecting with, you know it's going to be over in less than 7 minutes. And people just keep coming back. I would say that people bring friends, and every time it's, oh, I've brought three more friends to it, and now suddenly they're bringing more people to it. So there's just something really energetic and inspiring about the event.
We have this email from Ruth, and this is an excellent question. She said, how do you spell what you're talking about? And so we did put up a link to the Pekakicha site on our Facebook page, so if you are having trouble Googling it, you can look there. But it's P-E-C-H-A, capital K-U-C-H-A. So it is difficult to spell, given
it doesn't
how
help
it
with
sounds.
The pronunciation no. to have it two at, words.
At the same time, I think it's intriguing to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you say pachacacha, they say, what was that? I don't know. Why don't you tell me about it? It's like, I would love to tell you about that. So it works out pretty well.
So you talked about the handshake agreement and that you sign on for a year. Do you see this something that will continue into the future at the Figgy? This your last events for 2014 will be in October.
So we've already, because of the way that we do our programming around exhibitions, we've scheduled out all of the dates that we've selected for 2015 and have already started booking those. It's not every month. It's almost every month, though. We want to make sure that there's still a demand for it. We do tend to bring in over 100 people. I think Sarah had said that they maxed out right away at 150, and that's a pretty solid night for us, too, which is wonderful. But we don't want to risk doing it too often, just because we want to make sure that it is fresh and it is exciting for people so we can have that sustainability through the years.
And how many people in the door would make it worthwhile, even if you didn't hit 100?
We always joke about our free Thursday evenings because the pachacacha event does take place on those when the museum is open till 9 and free to the public. If we get 10 people at an event and they love it, then we have a great night. If we get over 100 people, that's wonderful too. But as long as the people there are interested and they're having fun, then it doesn't really matter.
All right, we are going to take a short break and we're going to take a look at the history of events kind of like pachacacha, opportunities for adult education, opportunities for people to share their ideas with other people in their communities and beyond. But I want Melissa and Sarah to stay with us so we can continue to talk about pachacacha as well. Melissa Morris, Director of Education at the Figge Art Museum and also the coordinator of the pachacacha events there. Sarah Wilson is co-director of the Des Moines pachacacha event, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're going to go back to the Chautauqua lecture circuit in just a couple of minutes. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we've been talking about a new way of sharing ideas, enthusiasms, and information with our community. It's called pachacacha, and it's sweeping the world right now. Also, many pachacacha events taking place in Iowa. If you want to find out more about it, you can go to our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio, and find out what this is all about. With me in the studio, Melissa Moore, Director of Education at the Figge Art Museum, where they've been doing pachacacha events for a little over a year, and they're almost once a month. They're on a regular basis. Sarah Wilson is also with me. She's co-director of the Des Moines pachacacha event. And you can give us a call if you want to talk about pachacacha, but we are going to turn the conversation to something that predates pachacacha, predates TED Talks, predates television, predates radio. In fact, this is the Chautauqua Lecture Series, one of the early versions of this long-standing tradition. Charlotte Canning is Irwin Professor of Drama at the University of Texas at Austin. She's also author of The Most American Thing in America, Circuit Chautauqua, or Chautauqua, as performance, which was published by University of Iowa Press in 2005. Hello, Charlotte.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm always happy to talk about Chautauqua.
And for people who are not familiar with Chautauqua, can you describe what it was?
Certainly. It started in upstate New York in 1874 as a training for Sunday school teachers to extend and deepen their ability to work with their students. And it really very, very quickly, within a few years, transformed into the first adult education program in the United States. People who couldn't get to New York would form Chautauqua literary and scientific circles. They would get a reading list. It was not unlike a book club. And if they successfully completed the whole course, they'd get a certificate. As people's interest in it grew, they wanted to bring it to their own towns, and so some of what was called later the permanent assemblies sprung up in the 1880s and 1890s, and then and they, like the Chautauqua in New York, were not for profit. However, in the early 20th century, around 1904, commercial versions of Chautauqua, which toured around the United States on a circuit arrangement, also began to emerge. And so by the 1910s, you get an extraordinary situation where literally millions of people every year, mostly in the summer and mostly in rural areas, are getting to go hear speakers and see performers, musicians, opera singers, politicians, university professors, you name it, it probably appeared on the Chautauqua circuit.
And there is a strong Iowa connection here, not just because we were on the circuit, but one of the big leaders in the movement was from Cedar Rapids, right?
That's right, Keith Vauder. He was an Iowa boy, and he moved the headquarters of his circuit back to Cedar Rapids, and he was, I guess now we'd say, sort of the CEO of multiple franchises. His was the Redpath Vauder circuit, and the others were named for the men who managed them. But yes, and then in the 1930s, he donated all his papers and materials to the University of Iowa, and they now have the largest and the best collection on circuit Chautauqua materials in the entire country.
So for the places that didn't build an auditorium or a building or have a permanent site, what did this look like when Chautauqua came to town?
I think it looked, maybe for some people's tastes, a little too much like the circus. It was a big tent. There were people picnicking and dressed in their Sunday best and excited to go. So very early on, the Chautauqua decided they would only ever use brown canvas to distinguish themselves from disreputable entertainments like circuses or medicine shows, which tended to use the more standard white canvas. So they used that as a kind of selling and branding point to make sure that
you... A more serious color, right?
Exactly, a more serious color for a more serious endeavor. And they want...
Go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, and so that was their way of signaling that you were not going to... your moral standing was not going to be compromised.
Now, what kind of speakers? I mean, you mentioned sort of the variety, but what caliber of speaker did this attract?
I think it probably attracted across the spectrum. Not every circuit was well-financed and could attract the best talent, so I'm sure some of the speakers were pretty awful. In fact, Sinclair Lewis in Main Street does an amazing job of depicting one of the weaker and more or less impressive circuits in that book as a sort of how it could be, as he calls it, wind and chaff and full of nothingness. So, but some of the stronger, more impressive circuits would have the most important politicians and public leaders of the day. William Jennings Bryan was a mainstay on the Chautauqua circuits. College professors often made their summer salaries by touring on the circuits and speaking on a range of topics from current events to history to literature and so on. There were a lot of people whose jobs were sort of lecturer, and they often spoke on self-help topics or a kind of DIY ethos, I think, was really important as well.
Now, if you look back at some of the transcripts of lectures, some of them can seem very, very dry. but was there a performance element to this? Were people really trying to impress?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Getting it across, as they said, was absolutely crucial. William Shire, who was from Iowa and was one of the most important journalists in the mid-20th century and who was the first U.S. journalist to really report serious news from Nazi Germany, started his career, in a sense, in high school working on the circuits. And he said by the time he saw William Jennings Bryan, there wasn't much left in terms of content, but he could still, through his charisma and his amazing speaking ability, pull the crowd. So I think performance it was kind of central, that although Chautauqua stressed content as its primary contribution, nobody wanted to sit in a hot tent in the middle of the summer when it's humid and 100 degrees and not be entertained.
Yeah, they wanted their minds to be blown.
Exactly.
So, you know, in reading old Victorian English novels, there are often mentions of lectures in town, like people who would come home from abroad and they would share their travel experiences. Did Chautauqua kind of grow out of that kind of sharing?
It did in a way. It grew out of the Lyceum movement, which was very popular in New England in the mid-19th century. And people like Thoreau and so on, Emerson, would travel and give talks and lectures. Even de Tocqueville, back in the 18th century, commented on the American need for uplift and for sort of what we would nowadays, we'd call lifelong learning. So in the beginning, lyceums were very local. They were very much arranged by local folks. But again, it became commercial eventually, and a man named James Redpath, who had been a journalist and was probably best known for interviewing John Brown in Kansas and bringing him some of his first national attention before he organized the raid on Harper's Ferry, began a lyceum circuit. And then Redpath saw the opportunity in Chautauqua, and one of his employees was Keith Vauder, who then, of course, split off and founded his own Redpath circuit. So it's very much, I think, ingrained into U.S. culture. Well before there was ever PowerPoint slides, I think we were all flocking to local community centers to hear talks and find out about the rest of the world.
Right, and the title of your book is The Most American Thing in America, and that comes from a quote, right?
That's right. Teddy Roosevelt is supposed to have said it. There's a lot of debate among scholars whether he said it or someone else said it or nobody ever said it, and somehow it got made up. But it seemed to me very striking that what they were saying was that this desire to come together and learn is part of what defines us as a citizenry, and that was very much, especially in the early 20th century, something that was promoted far and wide as one of our best attributes as a nation.
And I see TED Talks and Pachacacha, I see that as really an evolution of this. Can you give us an idea of some of the other things along that evolutionary path?
Sure. I mean, I think things like college lecture circuits, right? Most universities have student unions or groups that continue to book speakers. I think in some ways circuits of stand-up comedy are very similar in the idea that someone travels around and it's mostly just their person, right? Not a lot of props, not a lot of production needs. I think also the emergence of a kind of solo performance circuit is also part of that movement. I mean, I think it's the idea of a kind of single person moving from place to place to share knowledge we can find in so many incarnations across U.S. history.
And when you look at TED Talks, do you always think, yeah, I know all about that?
I do. I must admit I do. And in part, not always for the most flattering reasons. I think sometimes TED Talks are very much about the surface of ideas, and I think Chautauqua was as well. Although, again, unlike TED Talks or Pachacacha, speakers would sometimes speak for hours. So length was not something that bothered people in the early 20th century. So William Jennings Bryan might speak for 3 hours. So there was a certain amount of length that I think we would all find very difficult to put
right.
up with.
Yes. Yes, absolutely we would. Well, I'm curious, Melissa, to get you to weigh in when you were talking about Pachacacha and Sarah, too. I mean, a lot of the people who are giving these presentations are not polished or practiced public speakers, although with only 6 minutes and 40 seconds up there on the stage, that doesn't matter as much, does it?
You'd be surprised. Short answer, no. It doesn't matter that much because 6 minutes and 40 seconds is not a long time. It can feel like a very long time once in a while. But I'll tell you what, we make our audience agree to be nice and supportive. And we practice clapping before we even get started because it takes a lot of courage to get up there, not only to share something you're passionate about, but also to share it to an audience most of which you don't know. You know, it's most of the people in the audience are strangers. So Some people who come and say, I want to share, but I can't, I'm bad at public speaking, have taken an even more creative bend to presenting. We had one person who played a harmonica while images were up. Somebody else just read their poetry that they had prepared in advance. We had one woman who did yoga during it, and her presentation, you know, she gave an introduction during her first slide, but then the rest was images of her doing yoga throughout the museum in front of artworks, and then she was also doing yoga live. It was such a beautiful 6 minutes and 40 seconds. It really was.
Fascinating. Sarah, do you want to weigh in on that? I know one of your favorite presentations was from somebody who was very nervous and dropped
yep.
his note cards.
Yep. I won't share his name, but he was so excited to share, but was incredibly just very nervous and a little maybe terrified to speak on it. And before the event, he came up to me and he said, okay, Sarah, I know you've done this before and you speak professionally. And here I've got a full script here. I've got, you know, more of an outline here. And then I just have my note cards. And he said, what would you do? And I said, well, I would not do any of those, if, you know, but if you're going to do any, just go with your just simple note cards to just trigger your thoughts. Because if you get into a script, you're going to be locked into that. And so he said, okay. And so he gets up there and, you know, the slides are timed. And so maybe on the second or third slide, he drops them. Oh. And my heart just sunk when I saw that. And he took this deep breath and he stepped forward and he got this confidence and this energy in him that wasn't there before. And he just went, I know this. And then just spoke so beautifully and eloquently and so passionately about this topic. He was so, so proud of. And it was just I was so emotional because it was just the power of one. Here's this moment for him. And similarly to what Melissa said is we have the most supportive and wonderful audience that they want to see people succeed. And they will not tolerate if anyone is being anything but supportive. I mean, there have been times when the audience is like, OK, you need to stop that. And we're going to support this speaker.
What do you think motivates somebody who's not comfortable in front of a room to do something like this, Sarah?
I think part of it is it's formally informal. It's a very, you know, I can speak from our event. It's a very celebratory environment. It's very casual. And so I think for people who are maybe wanting to practice that, it's a really safe environment. The other thing is when someone's really passionate about something and you give them an opportunity to share it, it's difficult for people to shy away from that. And it's, again, I think people are drawn to the fact that it's very much a celebration of what are you passionate about? Find it and follow it. That's what I always tell people at the end of every session is find your passion and then follow it. So I think that's a draw. It's a really, really safe and celebratory environment. And you don't have that everywhere. You don't have that at work. You don't, you know, maybe have those opportunities in other situations.
And from your observations, Melissa, what do you think? What is it that makes it powerful for somebody, even if they're not comfortable in front of a room?
I think it's the same with us as it is in Des Moines, listening to Sarah. People have things that they want to share. We have a safe environment for risk-taking, and it's lighthearted and fun, like we mentioned, burger baskets and beers and everything in between. So I think they just feel comfortable.
You know, in bringing you on the show, Charlotte, I wanted to talk about this evolution and the connection from Chautauqua all the way up to Pachacacha and all of the other things in between. But it strikes me that in talking about these different events and even in TED Talks, you know, there's always a big audience in the room and there are lots of TED Talk events around the world that never make it to the kind of viral videos that a lot of us have seen. What do you think makes it extra powerful to have someone with this knowledge in the room with you, even if you're in a room with 300 or 3,000 other people? What makes that such a powerful way to share information?
I think there are a couple of reasons. I think the most important one is just the power of the live performance. Mm-hmm. That person is in the same, you know, is in your physical space, and it's happening now. It's unfolding right in front of you. I think in the same way that we all kind of leap when we see breaking news about something happening at that moment. I think it's also the bond that forms in any performance situation between a performer and a spectator, where you feel, whether you're the performer or the audience member, you feel a connection to what's going on, and you're pulling for that person. You want them to do well. You want, I can imagine being in the audience when that poor man dropped his cards.
Right.
My heart would have been in my mouth. I mean, I'm a teacher as well, and so I flashed on about 50 million stories
right.
of similar incidents.
But we are out of time. But Charlotte, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Charlotte Canning is the author of The Most American Thing in America, Circuit Chautauqua as Performance. Melissa Moore, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Melissa Moore, Director of Education at the Figge Art Museum. They have several Pachacacha events coming up. And Sarah Wilson, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Sarah Wilson, co-director of the Des Moines Pachacacha events. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.